And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
One of the things, Patty, when you and I started talking about season three, and I think this is so important, and this is going to be almost our roadmap for keeping a Detroit Motor City theme here for season three, is there are three events that happened for you and for the Pleasure Seekers in 1964. And I'm going to just say them briefly, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit about them briefly, and we will get into them in much more depth and play music and all of that. But briefly, in season two, you touched upon your musical influences and how and why you started a band. It was the Beatles, it was the Hideout with Dave Leone, and then it was seeing the Beatles. But I would love you to just clarify for us, paint the picture for us. Tell us what 1964 symbolized and represented to you.
Okay. Well, as I said, we were just teens doing our school stuff with no impression to start a band or anything. But when the British invasion was on TV, you know, with the Beatles, that was the first like sort of crossover important thing. It wasn't one of the events that we're speaking of, but when we saw them on TV, it sort of started me thinking about rock and all that. I mean, we all were excited to see this new hotshot thing that was coming to America.
This is winter of 1964.
Ed Sullivan. Exactly. It hit the whole nation. I mean, there was an excitement happening. Okay. And it's the story's always told wrong. And I get crazy with the interviewers. They cut and paste their interviews and they've got it wrong how it happened. So that was the first thing that happened, you know, to affect us at all, as far as thinking about, wow, this new music coming in. And then the Hideout opened in the spring. And
64 also. This is all 64.
This is all 64. But Dave, you know, we'll talk about Dave when we get there. But he was an entrepreneur and he opened a teenage nightclub. And everybody was going to it. And Nan and me and Diane were hanging. We worked at the place. I worked as a coat check and Susie too, and hung out there every Friday night. But Nan and me and Diane were best friends.
So tell us a little bit about Nan and Diane, just for those who maybe didn't listen to season two.
Nan and her sister Mary Lou come from a richer family. So, you know, you're talking about the neighborhoods again. We were in Grosse Pointe, but my poor dad had to figure out a way to work at GM and get a main job instead of doing music that he wanted to do for his life work, which he did at night. So he held dual jobs and he got us moved to Grosse Pointe. We were very middle class. Nan and Mary Lou came from a richer family. Their dad was an executive at Ford, a big high exec. So they had the money. And but we were all good friends. And Diane, and Nan was gorgeous. She was like the sex symbol, the blonde hair. She looked like Nico. I don't know if you've ever heard of Nico in history, but
the model. Hot
straight hair. Yeah. And she had a great little body and she played those drums. It was amazing. And then Arlene came in and stole her thunder a bit.
But, but that was later. But wait, I just
that was later. Yeah.
You and I know your chronology so well. I'm including me in this, but I just want to clarify, you and Nan were the same age. You were 16.
Nan was 17. They were 1 year ahead of me, Nan and Diane. They were one grade ahead.
Okay. And Diane, though, go ahead. Yep.
Diane was she was already playing keyboards because her dad gave her lessons and stuff. And her dad was the horn player for my dad's band. And they lived like 5 houses down the street. So very convenient. And they were very middle class, like our family. So they're Diane and me and Nan. And Diane was also the same age as Nan, 1 year ahead. So we were fiddling around, hanging at the, you know, just teenagers enjoying the music and hanging at the Hideout. And we were starting to hang at their houses too with the Quackenbush Boys. And they were already playing some of the rock music and really digging it. All the bands at the Hideout were that thing. They were doing the rock.
Quickly, for those who don't know, and I don't want people to be distracted from you and go Google it, tell us who the Quackenbush Brothers are.
I'm trying to remember. One of them was a great keyboard player, and the other one, I think, played guitar. I think they're both passed on. I know one of them is. And they were in The Fugitives. And then later they played with SRC and Scott Richardson, who was championed by David Bowie, you know, people in England. The English people got all turned on to the music coming out of Detroit. It was like this exchange. A lot of people don't know that, but I mean, they also, Iggy was connected with some English people that were into him. It just was a mix. And that was what Detroit did with their new music coming out. They were really experimenting stuff. So Nan was the daughter of the horn player. I mean, Diane was, excuse me. And we just started hanging with the Quackenbush boys and at their home, and they would record stuff and we were playing. I'd play my folk guitar, and I got sort of radicalized pretty quickly into the rock, and I had to get a rock guitar, not folk guitar. They turned me over from Peter, Paul, and Mary into the rock. We all went to see Peter, Paul, and Mary together at concerts, but we were really going into the rock at this point, okay, because of The Hideout and what was happening there. And Dave was pushing it. My brother was pushing it. So it just came real naturally. So we sort of played together, like rehearsing a little bit, like the three of us, you know, and just fiddling around, mostly with the guys, nothing formal, nothing like, oh, we're going to start a band, not even in our minds, just, you know, unnamed stuff. So that went through all the way through spring when he opened, all the way through the summer. Okay. We were off school, more hanging out. It just was a natural thing. And then those three events happened that you talked about, which we'll go into more in depth. First one was, I saw the Beatles, September.
And this is still 64.
64. This is how it really happened. I saw the Beatles, and I had my big epiphany watching the Beatles. And we'll describe that later, because it was a turning point for me. Everything formalized.
And I do want to, I don't want to tease the listeners that much, because we did talk a little bit about it in season
two. Yeah, we did.
As a reminder, and now that I'm here, it's so much more real for me to envision you at Olympia Stadium, seeing the Beatles in September in 1964. I mean, this was live, and I mean, this was their first U.S.
Tour.
So you're in this stadium. Tell us who you were with and tell us what was happening.
Oh my God. I went there not with Nan and Diane. I was with other friends from school, you know, and it was packed, sold out. And everyone around me, including my friends, were screaming at the top of their lungs and crying and everything. And I was like this robot. I was looking around side to side, and I focused on the stage, and it was like, it just hit me so hard, like this, I call it my epiphany. I looked at them and said, I want to do that. Same as what Susie said about Elvis. I want to be him. That was when it hit me that I want to do that, but I want to do it as an all-girl band. I want to start an all-girl band. That was the first time it came to my head. Very important moment.
That's an incredibly important moment. But I just, and tell me if I'm being too nitpicky here, but I love all of these stories. If Susie's moment with Elvis was, I want to be that, it was maybe more of the response of the entertainment or being an entertainer and the response. Whereas, and I don't mean to say it's one good or bad or the other. For you, it was the experience of, I want to do what they're doing. I want to play music and I want to do an all-female band.
Yes. And to take it to that thing, I don't know what came in my mind that I thought, I want to do it with girls. You know, I want to do something different that hasn't been done. We're going to do this, but we're going to do a girl band. So I went home and I called Nan and Diane immediately and said, we're going to do a girl band. That's it. You know, and we went through all the logistics. You know, how are we going to do this? You know, we need more people. We have drums, keys and guitar. So we concocted to bring in the two younger sisters. And this is where the memories change. You know, Susie thinks it happened when we were watching the Beatles. No, there was no phone call then. You know,
watching the Beatles. Wait, just to clarify, watching the Beatles on television.
And Sullivan. Yes. It was watching them on. We weren't even playing instruments yet or anything. That wouldn't have come into our mind to have a phone call to make a teenage band. Yeah. It was way before. We were just excited to see this new thing coming from England. So anyway, we decided to ask the younger sisters in.
When you say we, and again, it's only because it's really
Anne and me and Diane.
Yep.
That was us. We were a group. We were a little unit that we were fiddling. Just
and it
fiddling.
Was Nan's little sister, like your little sister, Susie. Mary Lou is the little sister of Nan. Susie comes in, and then Diane. Then you have enough players at this point.
Yes. So then we did have a phone call. That's when the phone call happened where everybody would, oh, that's exciting. Let's do it. And blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody was excited, started picking off instruments. And Susie was pissed because she wanted to play drums. And Nan already was taking drums from my dad's drummer. So, you know, the little sister and Mary Lou got the shits. They didn't get to pick. The three older sisters picked what they were playing, but they didn't care. And Susie said, well, what am I going to play? And I said, you're going to play bass, because Dad had a Jazz Precision bass Fender. It was like the Porsche of basses. And it was as tall as she was. So she said, okay. So she learned it real quick. You know, she got busy and did it. We had a lot of instruments at our house. We had a mandolin that we commissioned Mary Lou to play on a song we did called Angel Baby. And she had to learn a little bit of mandolin. But that's how that happened, that epiphany night. And that was right at the Beatles in the fall, 1964. That's the first huge event.
Well, one of the things that you said that I have a question about, and this is, we're going to be talking about all of this all season long, but you said that there were no other girl bands at the time to look to. Yes, there was Motown because there were front girls and all of that, but it wouldn't have crossed your minds to say, or your mind, not the others, your mind, Patty, to say, and I want it to be all female. So how did that come about? Have you thought about that epiphany? Because that's, to me, equally important as seeing the Beatles.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I was at the age when I was looking, what am I going to do with my life, blah, blah. And this music had turned me on, and I had noticed there were no girls doing it. There was only an orchestra in the olden days, Phil Spillane or something, all-girl orchestra. But it was an orchestra. They weren't doing rock, you know. So, and I'll talk about, there were two of us in 1964 that started. I don't know if I can explain this now quickly.
Yes.
Genya Ravan, okay? She was dating Richard Perry in New York. Richard Perry, who ended up producing Fanny, who I joined later. The circles, the connections are just amazing. And they were boyfriend, girlfriend, and they had a band called The Escorts in New York. Now, they were older than us girls in Detroit. And they were starting the same time with an all-girl band. She left Richard and started a girl band, and they were Beehives, you know, the style of the girly groups. The vocal
so they were
groups.
More like Arlene, your sister's age.
Yes, yes.
More of that doo-wop.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, they played rock, but it was more R&B based, New York based. You know, it was different. We were doing the Detroit sound. We were doing male groups from the get-go. That's what we were drawn to. We didn't even think about being a girl band doing a bunch of girl-based songs. It wasn't even in our minds. We went right to the male stuff, which was a difference between the two bands. And so Genya, it was called Goldie and the Gingerbreads. We both started in 1964. We were both the first signed in the rock genre to national labels. We were the first to have records out. We were first on the charts. So, you know, that's the truth of it. There were two of us. And that's early, way before Fanny, the Runaways, Go-Go's, all of them. You know, we were the earliest. My God, we were 14 and 16. So that's how that part rolled out. The two of us in different cities starting.